The NSABP trial is four cycles of AC followed by Q3-week paclitaxel versus the same chemotherapy regimen with trastuzumab for 52 weeks in a row, starting with the first dose of paclitaxel. The N9831 trial has the same basic structure, similar control arm, except that the paclitaxel is given weekly for 12 weeks instead of every 3 weeks. And then with the trastuzumab in arm B, either starting after the end of chemotherapy or concurrently with the beginning of paclitaxel. Once we got the cardiac toxicity data behind us and knew that neither of these trials was going to be closed because of cardiac toxicity issues, and that we were able to keep cardiac events relatively low for the women who participated in these trials, it made sense to, for the sake of the women who have HER2-positive breast cancer, to propose a joint analysis of the data for efficacy. And so that was proposed to the NCI and the FDA. The FDA had to approve it because B31 was the indication trial for trastuzumab in the adjuvant setting. And so that was approved in January of this year to do the joint analysis by the FDA and also previously by the NCI. The FDA said, don't use Group B because the trastuzumab is given after the paclitaxel, and that's a little different than what we have otherwise. And then we will combine the control arms and arm two of the NSABP trial and with arm C of the NCCTD trial. And now we have a new study for efficacy. The first meeting of the Independent Data Monitoring Committee to look at efficacy after this was approved was in the third week of April for both of the protocols. And at that time, the predefined statistical plan for the joint analysis required a total of 355 events in order to look at efficacy data. And in April, there were 395 events. So it was the first time that we could actually look at efficacy data. These patients were evenly matched. These patient populations between the two studies are virtually identical. With 395 events, when it was analyzed for disease-free survival, 261 were in the non-trastuzumab arm and only 134 in the trastuzumab arm for a hazard ratio of 0.48. And this absolute risk reduction, as opposed to relative risk reduction, was 12% at 3 years and 18% at 4 years, with a p-value of 3 × 10^-12. And for the stopping rule for the protocol, it had to be a p-value for it to cross the O'Brien-Fleming boundaries. It had to be a p-value of less than 10^-3, or 0.001. So this was way beyond the stopping rules necessary in terms of the statistical confidence to release these results and stop the trials. The benefit was the same across patient groups by age, by whether they were hormone receptor positive or negative, regardless of tumor size, regardless of number of positive nodes, and across the two protocols. And regardless of age, there's a dramatic improvement in disease-free survival with trastuzumab in all of the age cohorts. Similarly, the same effect in hormone receptor negative breast cancer and hormone receptor positive breast cancer. The improvement is impressive in both groups. The other thing I want to comment about hormone therapy in these patients who had ER-positive breast cancer is that virtually all of these patients, or the vast majority of these patients, these events really were in the setting of tamoxifen, not in the setting of aromatase inhibitors. Now, these weren't randomized against each other that way, but it's interesting that it doesn't appear, and just looking at this in kind of an overall sense, that it had a huge impact whether the trastuzumab patients received weekly or Q3-week paclitaxel. Just an observation. It's not a statistical comment. The median follow-up on the two protocols was 1.5 years for N9831 and 2.4 years, about 11 months longer for B31. And so the number of events that we saw in B31 just had more time to occur than the number of events that were seen on N9831. At 3 years, distant recurrence was better by 9%, and at 4 years, it was improved by 16%. And the difference between, there are just a few events that are occurring after 3 years. And this was statistically significant at 8 times 10 to the minus 10th with a hazard ratio of 0.47. The other way to look at this information is to look at the hazard of distant recurrence over time in terms of the rate per 1,000 women per year. On the control arm, it comes up between years 1 and 2 to about 90 events per 1,000 women per year, and then it kind of stays up there. Whereas in the patients who receive trastuzumab, it goes to about 40 per 1,000 women per year between years 1 and 2, but then between years 2 and 3 it drops, and between 3 and 4 it drops further. So what it means is that we're not so far seeing very many late recurrences. And then this, of course, has translated even at this very early point in time into a survival advantage. I don't remember seeing an adjuvant therapy trial with a median follow-up of 2 years that could show a survival advantage. But the improvement in survival, which is about 4.8% at 4 years, the number of deaths that occurred was one-third fewer, 92 in the control arm, 62 in the trastuzumab-treated arm, with a statistically significant p-value of 0.015. And the other point to comment about on this is that virtually all of the patients who were on the control arm who had recurrence received trastuzumab at the time of their recurrence. So this is in spite of receiving trastuzumab at recurrence, there's an early survival advantage. I wanted to just make one more point for a second about the importance of HER2 testing because of this information. You remember that when we started the trial, we actually evaluated how reproducible HER2 testing by immunohistochemistry was, and in small volume laboratories, we could not reproduce the 3+ immunostain in 24% of the first 104 patients that were entered in the trial. Whereas in larger volume laboratories, the replicability of the HER2 testing that was submitted as 3+ was actually quite good and quite reproducible. Whereas with FISH, there did not seem to be any problem at all. And then after we amended the protocol to require that small volume laboratories confirm their IHC either by FISH or by repeat immunohistochemistry at an NSABP-approved reference laboratory, then the number of cases that could not be reproduced on central review was just 3%. So this information, I think, is important in discussing the importance of accurate testing. The other side of the coin now, of course, is not only false positives, but also false negatives. And how do we avoid having false negatives in HER2 testing? And I'm sure that will come up as well. So I want to conclude by thanking just a couple of people. I want to thank all of you because, again, you made this happen, and the NSABP, you know, took the lead in all of this, and we appreciate all of your hard work. This is something that was really quite amazing.
Thanks, Ed. Before we get into some of the practical clinical issues, I'd like to start with Ed's favorite slide, the hazard rate for distant recurrence, and start with Dr. Slaim and ask, what do you think about that slide, and what do you think it means biologically?
Well, I think that the data, as Ed's already pointed out, are quite stunning and are unlike a lot of data we've seen in the past, and I think that they're telling. The action part of this regimen is the biologic we're using, Herceptin, and it's giving us remarkable results. I think all of us hoped that we would get good results. I think I anticipated they would be very good, but I think all of us were blown away by the degree of the results. So I think it's going to be something that will probably hold up. We obviously need further follow-up, but those are pretty striking curves.
Norm, what are your thoughts about that? Are we talking about cure now?
Well, you know, everybody is hesitant to speak in terms of superlatives because I think we've been there and been disappointed. But certainly, you know, we wait a lifetime, as Denny implied, to see curves that separate in this way with a treated line approaching the horizontal. So, I mean, this is our sincere, you know, hope that we are talking about cures. I think that there's sufficient data to suggest that that is in fact what's happening, as was pointed out by Ed, that to see a survival difference with this kind of follow-up of approximately 2 years is really extraordinary. So I think there's every reason to believe that what we're seeing in disease-free survival and distant disease-free survival is going to be translated to overall cure. But echoing Denny's admonitions that, you know, with 2 years of follow-up, I think we ought to continue the follow-up as we're going to do.
One of the practical clinical questions that people have the most questions about is the issue of the patient with node-negative tumor. I'd like to ask Dr. Geyer what his thoughts are on this. We've talked in the past about sort of applying the relative risk reduction concept in adjuvant systemic therapy across the spectrum of risk, and yet most of the patients that have been reported so far have been node-positive. Dr. Geyer, can we apply the relative risk reduction concept all the way down to smaller node-negative tumors?
Well, I think that would have been a contentious point in the absence of the HERA data, but I think the HERA data speaks adequately to that you know, they had a substantial number, a percentage of patients, roughly a third, who were node-negative, and their forest plot showed that the lower boundary was to the left of one. So I think that alone makes it a reasonable thing.